The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, 3-1 on the tennis plays, pick number 5, which started before the show. Again, for subscribers, VSiN.com/picks, they got all these on the overnight. Nuno Borges up. Or I should say it's one set apiece against Kecmanovic, but he's up a break in set number 3, so that's going very well. And beyond Yelena Ostapenko already out, we have potential drama on the ladies' side in a big way as Yulia Starodubtseva evened up. She lost the first set to Elena Rybakina. She evened it up in set number 2, wow. And she is up a break. Wait, up 2 breaks, I believe. In the third set, 3-love. Oh,
are we on this Djokovic match? Come on, TNT.
Djokovic having no problem in his match.
Yeah.
Will Hill to come. Todd Wishnev to come. Paul Sporer standing by. Just want to make 2 things. 1, clarification on the traffic thing this morning. Because you said, oh, no, you know, it's, you know, intersection. This was not an intersect. These were not intersections where nobody had lights and then people had to navigate in a 4-way intersection. I'm talking about twice this morning where 3 portions of the intersection we're going for 5 minutes at a time, but the side that I was on never got green.
Mm.
So you had to fight for your life and stop 3 ways of traffic to do it. So I just want to get extra
points.
That's
far more dangerous than what I encountered. Mine was just all reds on all sides.
And the other thing coming up, well, Country Club, and by the way, because Kelly got to talk some golf here, but I just mentioned Kendrick Perkins calling Alex Caruso one of the top 5 role players of all time. So we just got into a conversation off air. I hesitate to bring this up because we're going to get a flood of these.
We're going to get a million
tweets. Who are the greatest NBA role players of all time? To which I immediately responded, oh, now we're going to have an argument on just what constitutes a role player.
Yep.
Because the first name out of my mouth was Dennis Rodman. To which you responded, he's not a role player, which is exactly what I thought would happen.
Yeah.
And so then we defined it as you can't be one of the top 3 players on your team.
At least that, right? I mean, he was the 3rd most important player on that Bulls team.
He was, but he wasn't that on the Bad Boys. So I don't know.
Well, right. And Kawhi Leonard was a role player on the Spurs, which is fair. I think that's a fair conversation to have. I'd agree with you on Rodman if you're talking about it that way.
Anyway, we could do all that.
Kawhi Leonard used to be a role player. He's not a role player anymore. That's fair. It's a game evolving.
Robert Horry with 7 championships has to qualify, I guess.
I mean, if we're just talking postseason, yeah. I think he's the winner.
Well, this has devolved into a little sports talk radio. Paul Sporer will join us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. At Sporer is where you can follow him on Twitter. Always appreciate his efforts to come on the show. Sleeper in the Bust is the name of the podcast. Paul joins us now from Austin, Texas, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's that? Oh, with an athletics hat on. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm well. How are you all?
We're great. Let's start.
Hang on.
Oh,
the answer is the microwave, Vinny Johnson.
Okay.
The microwave.
There we go.
Who did I used to call instant offense on this show? One of our guests, I used to say instant offense, the microwave.
John Legesa.
Yeah. He was the
Johnny. Microwave. That's my boy right there. Yeah,
I was about to be embarrassed if I couldn't remember that.
Hey, Paul, have you caught John Legesa's podcast by any chance? Have you caught that act?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is quite a
absolutely.
It's quite a treat, isn't it?
He's my friend. That's my friend right there.
That's my buddy as well.
He got my back.
I just want to flash up the May most wins update for those who have bet this market. We don't have We don't have the June market up yet, but Eric Biggio is on the job. He told us yesterday at Caesars William Hill. This has gotten very interesting because both the Rays and Guardians now have lost a couple in a row. And so it has given the Brewers and the Phillies the opportunity to knot it up at 16 wins, 4-way tie now. Brewers are 16-6, Rays are 16-6. Philly 16-8, Guardians 16-9. Remember, William Hill Caesars, that would constitute a dead heat if it were to end now. This just in, it does not. But at Circa, fewest losses is the first tiebreaker, followed by run differential. So the Brewers right now just edging the Rays on a second tiebreaker. That's where this stands. Paul, I'll say this to you. Brewers, we love them. You and I have talked about them many times before.
Yes.
By the way, Braves and Dodgers lurking 1 win behind, it should be noted. And then the Diamondbacks and the Nationals, 2 back. Let's actually start with the Nationals. Is this sustainable for this team? This has been a great surprise in Major League Baseball.
It really has. You know, this was a team that I felt was kind of on the rise with some of the young things that they were doing. But I'm not even going to sit here and pretend that I saw this coming, because one of the key pieces, if you had told me that they were going to be a couple games over 500 playing really well, I'd have said there's no way Dylan Cruz isn't a huge part of that. So again, I'm not going to pretend like I saw it, because the way I saw them getting there was him as a central piece of that. For me, it reminds me a little bit of the Cardinals in a little bit of a different way. They're not one-to-one, just in the setup of, I believe in the offense with the Nats, and I believe in it with the Cardinals. I don't believe in either of their pitching staffs. And I'd go so far as to say that I'm not sure you could make a quality staff out of combining the two. You know, you got Cade Cavalli throwing some good games. I like him. He's an interesting upstart guy, but he would be the number one on this theoretical team. Again, bring both teams in. He's better than Liberatore. He's better than McGreevy. I know McGreevy's numbers have been good, folks. The regression candidate like crazy. In fact, it already started to come. So you got the soft tossers with St. Louis. I just don't trust the Nats pitching. I do believe in their hitting. I know you didn't want a full analysis on them, but they can hit. Be careful with that Nats offense.
I'm looking for a make miss on the playoffs. Would you ever bet them to make the playoffs, or way too early?
No.
Yeah.
It's just way too early, because the Phillies are back, right? Like, and as far as the upstarts in that division, I think you kind of compare them to the Marlins. Now that would be a super team if you combine them, if you could get the Marlins pitching, even with Sandy not looking as good as I would like. But if you could combine their pitching with the Nats hitting, then you got a team. But I think they're almost the more appealing upstart for a playoff spot, but I just don't see either, because I'm too stupid to even fully rule out the Mets either. So it's just too difficult a division to constantly get wins there, that even if the Mets don't come all the way back, let's say they just play 500 the rest of the way, they'll get a lot of wins from the Nats. So I just don't see how they're getting there with this pitching.
Nats, by the way, if you're scoring at home, 13-1 to make the playoffs still at this early stage. It's not June yet, people. It's not June yet, but 13-1, if you have any interest in the Nats to make the playoffs.
You should be getting way better than that, though.
I just find this baseball, you should be getting way better than that.
I kind of like the Phillies. Right. -140?
-140. Yeah.
I like that.
I like that I'm way better, personally.
All right.
Have you and I talked about this? I'm fascinated by this in the NL, because I'm not a Guardians guy. The Guardians now have lost a couple in a row to the Nats. I have the season win total under on them, so I'm not convinced they're going to be a 500 team. You have two divisions in the American League, Paul. The Central and the West. The West right now, nobody's 500. The Central, only one team is 500. And I've said this before again, 1994, one of the things we missed out was the Texas Rangers were 10 games below 500 in the West, and the season ended.
Would have been so fun.
It would have been so fun. Is there any rhyme or reason to this happening, that two entire divisions minus X the Guardians right now are struggling in this manner? Or is this just randomness, in your opinion?
I think it is a lot of randomness here. I mean, and the real key that you look at out West is every team sucks at home there. And that's where everyone's supposed to get right. At least the Central teams are playing to what you expect, which is quality at home and struggle on the road. And they got some really bad road records there with my Tigers and the Royals not even having 10 wins on the road, neither of those teams. They're 7-17 and 8-21 respectively. But you go looking up and down the West, and none of them win at home. 10-14, 14-15, 12-11. Okay, that's an over 500, sorry. 12-14, 12-16. But you get my point there. So that it is, and that's anomalous. I just don't think that's going to last all year, where the West has nobody or one team, Texas, who is one game over 500, and then the rest being under 500. I think it is an interesting division that could beat itself up a bunch, though. You know, the Astros I thought were better, but then they lost a bunch of their pitching. Remember, I was calling them the horror movie villain. I think maybe they are, you know, toward the end of the Halloween franchise there, because I'm just not sure how they can recover from the health that they've hit. But yeah, are the Athletics good enough to go way over 500? I don't know. I'm wearing their hat. I like the team. They're fun, but I don't like their pitching either. And then the Mariners, do they have enough hitting? You got these teams that are half good, and that's why they're winning half their games, I guess. That was a stupid. No, that's not why they're winning half their games, but you get what I'm saying.
I do. I know what you meant. Let me ask you this question, because we've thrown this around all week. We did a whole blind resume thing on it the other day, but you haven't had a chance to chime in on this. It's the NL Cy Young market, which is maybe, and I know we're not in June yet, but at this point in a season, maybe the greatest thing I've ever seen in any awards market ever. You have seven dudes, the seventh being Paul Skeens with a 3.00 ERA.
I know.
Six other guys are sub two, one of which is sub one. Sanchez, Mizorowski, Skeens, Sale, Otani, Burns, Kyle Harrison, and Zach Wheeler. are the others that I'm talking about. By the way, Yamamoto, who I didn't even mention, he's thrown in there as well. And then there's Mason Miller, the reliever of all time, right? Like, yeah. Mason Miller's sitting there 50 to, I should say, of all time. But
you just explained why he can't win it.
That's right.
Right.
That's
because of all those other starters.
That's exactly
the only
right.
way I can create an avenue for a reliever. I'm very anti-reliever for the Cy Young. You have to have a bad starter class, and you couldn't find the more opposite case than that for Miller here.
100% agree, and I have a Miller ticket. By the way, Michael King deserves a shout-out, who's 70-1 in there as well. If you had a vote today, who is your NL Cy Young winner?
It is Sanchez for me. I would labor. I think I'd probably go back and forth between Sanchez and Mizorowski. And in this case, again, you know, we're dealing with the small samples that we have in front of us. But the 72 to 64 innings would be, you know, would be a big part of that there. That would kind of push me towards Sanchez. Since we are going off these small samples here, you got to make small little moves. But Mizorowski has just been so amazing. You know, I had some concerns about his, you know, the wildness that he showed last year down the stretch a little bit. And I was like, are we going to get kind of the poor end of Mizorowski's command? Nope, we're not. We're kind of getting the high end of it right now. And he's unbelievable. But I'm going to go Sanchez. I think he, you know, if we ended the season today for some reason, which would obviously ruin my life, but I think he would get it. Otani's right there, but 49 to 72 innings, right? And I know the 0.73 ERA is amazing. I think he would probably win it if they were voting today. I think Otani would win it. My pick would be Sanchez, though. 22 extra innings is the sealer for me there. Volume matters.
Paul, I hate to leave with this. Tigers' worst record in the month of May, and just drop.
They're so bad. It's unbelievable. The bullpen was always terrible. This was always coming, maybe not this severely, but even in April when things were going all right, I knew the bullpen was terrible.
5-18 with a minus 38 run differential in the month of May. Paul, thank you, sir, as always.
Take care, y'all.
Paul Spohr, everybody. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Clock is ticking on one of the best VSiN Pro offers of the year. It's your final week to get a full year of VSiN Pro. Normally $240 for just $199. And when you sign up now, we'll give you 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day with promo code PRO. You'll get daily best bets from VSiN hosting guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24-7 live video, plus full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. Offer expires after May 31st, though, so don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Tweets and beat of the book, always appreciate it. Nevada Azer, the wait was worth it. Coach of the year, Joe Mazzulla. He's got Mazzulla every which way. He's got Mazzulla in parlays over at FanDuel. Nicely done.
You know what? What's annoying about it, even the dragging on, is like, it just reminds me of the rookie of the year results more. Like, no, I need to mentally move on from NBA award season.
Yeah.
Still can't believe it. That's a con bet.
Which way? Oh, Con.
Yeah.
What utter horse manure that was.
Mm-hmm.
Sean's Fox plays. Where's all that Carter Hart hate now? 6 straight wins, the clear best goalie in the playoffs.
You're right. I got to walk back all my Carter Hart comments over the several months.
Kelly has been front and center. All the Carter Hart hate that he's had. Jason Stark, the Mets haven't won anything in 40 years either. Yeah, 1986. I was 9 when we won our last World Series. It's getting close to the Knicks drought.
Okay, Mets-Knicks vibes are similar. You're right. From the New York friends I have, when the Mets get hot, they roll into the playoffs, that belief level just reaches this point of, oh boy, it's going to come crashing down so hard.
He also adds, he goes, ask a basketball player like Jordan or Kobe if MSG is the Mecca. It sure as blank is. To which Mikey P responds, I'm with you, Gil. I hate when MSG is referred to as the world's most famous arena. It's not. Anyone ever heard of the Colosseum in Rome? Yeah, you tell them.
Yeah. This is also one of my favorite VSiN moments of all time is when JVT and Matt Eumanns got into it with each other over this topic.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, Matt Eumanns, respects basketball history, very much respects what Madison Square Garden is.
Yeah.
JBT cannot stand the idea of, I think any arena being called the Mecca of basketball, but especially Madison Square Garden. That was like an on-air argument 7 years ago, and it was great.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Rules for society. Oh, rules for society. I love this tweet because it was going on in my head as I was saying it. He said, 66-game NBA regular season without load management. Can we just have that every year, please? I honestly, I've said that since that 66-game season. The lockout year of 99, 66 games, it was glorious. It was the perfect length of a regular season.
Sign me up, bro. You're not going to hear me arguing. This is the first thing. It drives me nuts, all the tanking conversations, right? Because that's the first answer. How do you get rid of some of this stuff? You play less games, but nobody's agreeing to do that because everybody makes money off more games.
Your girl Martha Kostyuk won.
Let's go.
She survived. Kelly's got her in a parlay. She survived our girl Katie Volleynets.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know if I was aware of it at the time yesterday, Gil. I didn't realize I was putting in a three-day, three-leg money line parlay.
Yeah, you got to look at schedule.
Yeah.
But yes, Patrick Kelly, he tweeted again. He said, apologies for all the tweets, but is Rabakina in some trouble? Yeah, she is. She's down a break 4-2 in the third to Yulia Starodubtseva. The sort of sidebar commentary about that match is Starodubtseva is from Ukraine and Rabakina is Russian-born, who plays under the flag of Kazakhstan, but Russian-born. There's a little political thing happening there on the sidebar of that match. That must be electric watching that thing.
I'll be your hype man for a second, too. Old Star to Seba or whatever. I've not heard of her before about 3 weeks ago when you bet her for first time. I saw you bet her, and you've bet her a few times since then. So you have bet on her.
Jesse Welch. All right. I finally got my Missoula tickets cash. Now I'm at a loss for my daily tweet. Should I just jump aboard the maple syrup train? Oh, God. Incognito better. Oh, here comes the role player tweets. God. Steve Kerr was the first name that popped in my head as greatest role player.
Yep, definitely up there.
Jay Nez, Michael Jordan, best role player ever. His role was to kill all hope.
All right, well done. Well done.
Ice Goon says, I'll admit I'm biased because I saw him play for us at Fullerton, Cal State Fullerton, but Cedric Ceballos, single greatest garbage player in NBA history. Teams never ran plays for him, yet he averaged 14.3 a game. Tom F., role player, Robert Horry. The rings bag it up. Yep, I said Robert Horry earlier. And Scott, New York Mets 16. Gil, your morning commute this morning should have been cake with all the practice you get trying to catch your flights immediately after your shows. You're 100% right. That experience did come in handy.
That's
hilarious. You wanted to say something else about the role
players?
Stuff?
Yeah. Well, would you like? I think AI did a great job with this because even AI, like us, was a little uncomfortable with defining exactly what a role player
is. Subjective. Yeah.
So they broke it up into the ultimate role players. Okay. Robert Horry.
Okay.
Dennis Rodman.
See, thank you.
Michael Cooper.
Oh, yes.
Steve Kerr and Bruce Bowen, which is also a good show.
Oh, interesting. Yep.
And then the Super Sixth Men is the next category they went, which I'm glad this got brought up because we were talking about this with Manu Ginobili. First name, Manu Ginobili. And can you consider him a role player if he's coming off the bench, but he's your second leading scorer scorer?
He was at least the top three player on that team.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, no doubt. And I think that kind of started something, too, right? Popovich kind of started it with Manu. And then I think these are two great names because especially regular season, I think about these guys, Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams, who each won three Sixth Man of the Year awards. That if you're talking regular season, for sure, super role players. And then there is the group of elite defensive specialists, Shane Battier, PJ Tucker, Andre Iguodala that they list, which I think that's a good group too.
So we should probably put it to bed there because there's too many subcategories.
I told Gil off air. I don't think I've asked AI anything before that they've done a better job with than this.
Nicely done, AI.
Good job, AI.
Who do we call? Who do we call? Who do we thank?
Get someone on the horn, Danny. We'll patch him in live on air. Siri.
Back to baseball for a second, because I love talking to Paul Spohr always. Dodgers, who are one win behind the leaders, right? They have 15 wins in the month of May. We're going to look at most regular season wins here. The Dodgers today against the Rockies. I don't know if you saw this with Shohei on the Hill. Flirting with being a $4 favorite.
Oh, really? $4 favorite?
Flirting with it. I'm seeing minus 385 where I'm looking right now.
So this also means Otani's not hitting. Is he hitting these days when he pitches? Has that changed in like a week?
It's a fluid situation is what their official word is, but let's go Borges, by the way. Okay. So the Dodgers, if you're wondering, like what's the highest money line in any game. Sorry, I got distracted with tennis. The highest money line in any game in the history of Major League Baseball, or at least since we've been tracking betting lines. The Houston Astros of 2019, remember they were a juggernaut during the 2019 regular season. Famously, if you listen to this here show, it was the famous obligation bet on the Washington Nationals to beat them in the World Series, which happened, where I said, it is your obligation to bet the Washington Nationals with these numbers, and that came through. But the Astros during that regular season, they had a few games where they were above $5 favorites. The biggest was minus 521. They had a minus 521 and a minus 519. I want to say against the Angels was the minus 521.
That is pretty wild. I remember $4.
They only lost, like, of the big favorite times, they lost one of them. Like a 2-1 loss in one of them.
Unfair question. Do you remember if we've seen Dodgers minus 400?
We have seen Dodgers minus 400.
Like past couple years?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But no one else has gotten to five, as I recall. Anyway, most regular season wins, right now, the Dodgers are the favorite, once again, minus 140. Right now, the regular season, where it stands right now in terms of the full standings, forget about the month of May, but the full standings, Dodgers are 35-20. The Braves have two more wins than they do, and the two games, a better record, 37-18. The Braves are plus 280, but the Dodgers are minus 140. There you see the Rays at 5-1. The Rays have 34 wins. They're 34-18. Yankees are 7-1. Yankees are 33-22. On and on till the break of dawn with the rest of those. When you look at schedule, if you care about strength of schedule, not even in June, just to be thorough about this, I don't, but just to be thorough about this, the easiest remaining schedule in all of baseball, we're talking, two-thirds of a season still, right? Belongs to the Tampa Bay Rays, and the second easiest is the Cleveland Guardians. So before you dismiss the Rays at 5-1 and the Guardians at 45-1, you should just know that information. Doesn't move me at all, but just thought you should know. Dodgers are still the team to beat here for me. Dodgers minus 140, unless they just stop caring late in the year.
So this is
that's the problem with these markets. You don't know if these teams that are so great are going to stop caring if they have big leads in their division.
Yeah. If this number was a little better, I think I'd be in on the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Because this was, we're about back at preseason numbers. I just pulled up the preseason odds that we went over. They were minus 165 favorites.
By the way, worse, the Braves, that applies to the Braves too, at plus 280. Will they care if they have a big lead still? So much time to go. Fewest regular season wins, pardon me. Remember the Rockies being a $4 favorite?
Yeah, minus 400.
They're still minus 235.
Really?
Yeah. 20-36. They have the fewest wins in all of baseball.
Well, it's going to be them or the Angels, right?
Angels are 21-34. The Royals have 22 wins. The Giants have 22. The Red Sox have 22. The Mets have 22. So, I mean, there are other candidates right now. But I'm not betting either of these markets. We have our choice where we can put our betting dollar. Just thought this would be interesting to look at anyway.
I might get involved with Dodgers at some point. It's getting there. But now we're kind of like, there's no value where they were at preseason. I think you needed to catch that earlier.
Yeah. By the way, Mets, second hardest remaining schedule in all of baseball if you're interested at 55-1. Coming back on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game. Live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. I don't want to overrun the show with tweets, but I do have a few I want to read here.
We had to cut back Will's time today, too.
Yeah, that's a whole nother matter where you said only one segment for Willie. But I just want to read these two. Jason Stark letting us know the Dodgers were, in fact, a minus 440 favorite at DraftKings earlier. Now they're minus 411 against the Rockies. We were just talking off air about this. I remember when Randy Johnson was pitching for the Yankees once. This is in the early 2000s. He was like a minus 420 favorite against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and the Yankees lost. So I understand why. There is a point of resistance at minus 440. I don't care if it's Shohei pitching and Barry Lamar Bonds at the plate or whatever it is. Like, right. Once you get the $4 favorites, $5 favorites, you may want to think about the dog. And then Robert's B01, top role player, VSiN, no doubt, Will Hill, he says. But Dustin Sweetelson is a clear second.
That's pretty good rankings right there.
Wow. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
And with that introduction, Will Hill joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at not the Will Hill, two E's in the. He is the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast, not once, not twice, but three times a week, coming at you from your wherever you get your podcast. Willie, how you doing, man?
Boys, what's going on? And yeah, Todd Wishnev, who I believe will be coming up here shortly, claims there was a Yankees-Royals game in 2018 where he got the Royals is like a $5 dog, a $4 dog. He will give you the price. We've been over this in the group chat before. He said the Yankees were like a $6 favorite.
Nope.
I don't buy it. I remember what he was talking about. It was a doubleheader. Severino was pitching. This back when Severino was, you know, one of the better pitchers in baseball. And he claims there was a Hunter Goodman homer, and he cashes like a $4 to $5 you know, plus price with the dog. I don't remember anyone being like a minus 600 favorite. So he will clear up the details, and we'll probably go at this all day for a couple of days.
This is where the debate becomes, because he might have gotten it. He's not lying. He might have gotten it at some Fakakta skin, right? Where like they had some nonsense number. But just in terms of like, you know, consensus lines, the 2019 Astros were the ones that had the highest. More than a $5 favorite against the Los Angeles Angels, minus 521. They did lose as a north of a $5 favorite in another game. But yes, I remember us having this discussion, the group exchange. Todd is adamant. Nope, it was there. I remember it. It happened. By the way, you can.
Yes.
Go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
No, not a truth telling issue, not an integrity issue. That's just right. a poor memory, I think.
Well, I mean, maybe not even poor memory, just the fact that it was probably some out of bounds skin, but I don't know. Yes. We might tell us differently. By the way, Shoulda Bet More podcast. Scan the QR code for more. Yeah. With the neon green for Will.
When are we going to update your podcast imaging to match this, Will? Because it's great. Yeah. This is like the no fear style of font, and the bright green that really pops. You know, we got to work on that.
It pops.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Get Moreno on it.
Oh, Rybakina has come back on serve. Not that we have anything on it, but I just wanted to see her upset. All right, Will, you've got baseball plays today. Let us begin with the Cincinnati Redlegs. You're on the Reds at the Mets today. The Reds a slight dog here.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to happen for the Mets this year. Sorry, Dave Ross. Sorry, Mets fans. Could be worse. You could be a Giants fan. That's not true.
Hey,
Giants won some championships.
Recently,
at least. Giants might be moving the fences in, by the way. I saw Eldridge complaining, hey, I hit the ball that far. My agent's texting me. I think the Giants might be their fences in. Neither here nor there. I like the Reds today. Abbott, who's a pitcher I've liked in past years, kind of an underrated pitcher, started off the season poorly, but his last four starts, only two earned runs combined. You know, Mets are going to go with one of these. I think a bullpen game, and Reds start to swing the bats a little bit better, and the Mets, man. I know you got all these extra playoff teams now, and it's not even June, and they made a run 2 years ago. It's a long baseball season, 100-plus games, all of those caveats. It might just not be happening this year for the Mets. What a disappointment. All these expectations, all that payroll really started, you know, the second half of last year, and it has continued into this year. What a disaster the Mets are. So I think this is a pretty playable price here for the Reds and Abbott, who has pitched better recently.
You know, you bring up the Giants. Have I done this on air yet? As a guy who had no expectations for the Giants, a Giants fan that I am this year, and I heard others being bullish on them, I'm like, I don't see it.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, we talk about a spectrum of what could happen to a baseball team in 162 games. Everything breaks your way. Everything goes against you. They are like the quintessential example of everything sucks. Adamas can't, you know, it's like Patrick Bailey couldn't hit, except like in rare clutch moments, but generally he's like he was a great catcher defensively, but he couldn't hit a lick. They had to dispatch him. Ramos, you know, can't field. Matt Chapman can't hit all of a sudden. Adamas can't field. They don't have any reliever, any closer. Logan Webb is just being wasted, and all of a sudden, like, the framing doesn't help him as much anymore. Just and by the way, Vitello, the manager, even when he makes what I think are analytically good decisions, it doesn't work out. Like, it's an amazing thing to observe baseball teams like that just hit the skids on everything.
Buster Posey on the hot seat?
Not yet.
I don't want to root against for that. I love Buster.
Not yet. Not yet, anyway. All right, what about your Yankees, Mr. Mann? Things are going well-ish, I guess, for them. Well-ish.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's kind of remarkable here. Only 2 months in, they've had a bunch of different peaks and valleys. They start out 7-1. They lose 6 of 7. They win 16 out of 19. They lose 11 out of 15. They've now won 3 in a row. They got the walk-off Sunday, come from behind Monday on Memorial Day, and then they blow out Falter in the Royals last night. So maybe this is another upswing here. I actually think this is a pretty playable price here for the Yanks. $1.50 or so with Cole, who kind of looked like Cole his first start. And I know he didn't get a lot of strikeouts, but he was hitting 98 on the gun. And look, if you're going to get that version of Cole, Yankees are going to be really good here. And I do like them to win the division, not only today, but I bet them yesterday 140. I think they're up to 150 at DraftKings to me, but they're 2.5 out with 100 something to play. Tampa's been really good in one run games, 8-1 going into yesterday. I'm trying to think what the score was yesterday, but I think the Yankees can overtake Tampa. So I like them not only today, but I think that's a good bet. I know you're tying up $1.50 in terms of your bankroll for a bet that won't cash if it wins until October. But Yankees I like today, and I think that's a pretty cheap, pretty reasonable price here to overtake Tampa here and win the division.
Okay, Yankees in the game today at Kansas City. Talk about teams that have been just in the absolute gutter this year. And then Yankees to win the AL East for Willie. Also, do we call this a Willie special or a Stevie special, the F3 under?
I think it's a Fez special. I think he was the first one to tip me off to this. Yeah, he's been right about this so often. He always points it out when you get one of these games, it's 1-1 after three, and the first three under cashes. But all hell breaks loose often in the fourth or fifth inning when these lineups see these pitchers second, third time throughout the lineup, throughout the order, and the batting average just always goes up, and all hell can break loose in those later innings in the first five. So first three under here, Gausman and Yuri Perez. Perez has been a little disappointing. The velocity has been outstanding, but some of the other numbers, I just thought he'd be better than this. Maybe he's starting to turn a corner. Was pretty good last time out, I think, against the Mets. And Gossman's numbers are tremendous. Get swings and misses, doesn't walk anyone. So under 2.5, the juice is reasonable. Shop around, but in the 125, 130 range, I like that under 2.5 in the first three. And I was looking at Gossman. He's in the 30-35-1 range for AL Cy Young. I feel like there has to be a bet there, Gilly, because the NL Cy Young race, we talked about it last week. You did a good bit on it, I think, on Monday. I can't remember a more stacked race, a more loaded race, but the AL Cy Young race with Schlittler, who is now even money at some books, that just can't be the right price with this much time left in the season. I feel like there's a bet somewhere. I bet DeGrom a couple weeks ago, 15-1, and he's not pitched well, and he's down to 4-1 somehow, which I don't really understand. But maybe Gossman's worth a shot, but I feel like there's someone hiding in plain sight here in this AL Cy Young race. I can't really justify Schlittler even money this early into the season.
I think it's a great way of phrasing it. Somebody is in the weeds somewhere, it feels like. Because Kelly so rudely reduced you to one segment today, what do you have to say for yourself, Kelly Bidlin?
We got a busy day. I love Will. He knows that.
I don't know if he knows that. We'll find out. Will, do you know that? Do you know that he loves you? Does he know that? Basketball.
I tend to believe him.
He tends to believe you. Okay, that's a lean. You have an Alex Caruso Western Conference Final MVP ticket. Do you feel live?
I've got a Caruso MVP bet, and I've got a big pile of bets in my past that you get great numbers on. They've got a shot, and they just don't quite get there. I feel like this is one of them. I think I wouldn't say he's not live, but I just feel like I'm going to get my heart broken here. Now we've heard Bontemps, say on the Hoop Collective pod that he'd vote for him. He's played really well. SGA hasn't shot the ball well. I still think it's unlikely, but hey, if you told me I bet him 35-40-1 conference finals MVP, I've heard worse bets. I don't have a feel for this game six. It's hard once you get multiple injuries on both sides. I had OKC in six plus 450. I bet it in six plus 450 and gave it out before the series. So I guess I'll stick with it, but just hard once you get multiple injuries on both sides, but hopefully have a shot with Caruso. I don't feel that optimistic though.
If someone came to you today and said, hey, Spurs plus 285, shop around, maybe even $3 here, down three games to two, and they said, should I bet it? What would you say to them?
It's properly priced. Again, I don't think it's the worst bet, but I feel like OKC is going to figure out a way to get a split of these next two here. I wouldn't bet it, but look, I'm hoping for a game seven. The series kind of been a little bit disappointing here, but hopefully we get a game seven and a classic game seven, and it kind of vindicates everything.
It's really true. We talked about this a little later. We were obviously betting on all this. How many total playoff games have been great? It's very few.
Five or six, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Willie, appreciate it. Sorry about the one segment, but we got to talk hockey with Jonathan Davis on the other side, so you'll forgive us. Please.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.
Will, maybe not. He's like, no, I'm not forgiving
Never.
You. Will Hill. Jonathan Davis, Hurricanes, Canadiens, and the Vegas Golden Knights. We got to chat about it next on A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside Justin D. We were talking about the Astros being a -521 favorite against the Angels. I mentioned that they had lost also as north of a $5 favorite that same year. Justin D points out, he goes, the Astros lost the Orioles as a -500 favorite that year, roughed up Verlander early and walked off against Osuna. Wow.
Probably okay. A couple of Mountcastle home runs.
And Patrick,
I don't know if he was on the team, man.
Patrick Kelly says, Curly Neal, best role player ever. And I've always called the, okay, Curly Neal, best role player ever. From the Globetrotters. Kelly, in case you were scoring.
Yeah.
Jonathan Davis is going to join us here for hockey. He made a, we were just chatting before. He made an interesting, we were talking Golden Knights, but then he asked an interesting question. He goes, did Wemby get any backlash for not doing the on-court interview after the game yesterday? I didn't even realize he didn't.
Yeah, he blew it off.
He blew it off. But you know, it's, I'm so glad he brought that up because it triggers for me something that I've been wanting to say on the show, which is Wembanyama, great dude. I love his post-game press conferences when they're in the back and it's the whole press and they're asking him questions. He's up on the podium. He pauses and then he answers very deliberately, very thoughtfully. But the on-court part right after the game, mm-hmm. he seems to hate those.
Yeah. Yeah.
He, whatever question comes, he's like one sentence out. So it doesn't surprise me that he missed it.
I think there was some backlash. I think there should be more because it's – I think Victor Wembanyama, this is kind of what happens when you do something so well. But it's he's been so great and I think has so clearly taken so much pride – in being great, trying to get to that next level as quickly as humanly possible, right? And kind of accepting all the responsibilities that he knows comes with being a great player. So to see him kind of blow off something like that, it's part of the gig.
It is.
You got to stand up there and answer questions.
Part of the gig. Not why we wanted to talk to Jonathan, but he brought that up, so I want to give him a shout. Jonathan Davis joins us now to talk hockey with us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Always a pleasure to have Jonathan on. We bumped Willie's second segment so we could talk hockey, for God's sakes. You can follow.
Well, rightfully so. He's a bum.
Rightfully so, he says. West Coast Hockey at HL, HKY on the hockey is where you can find Jonathan on Twitter. Before we talk about the Hurricanes and the Canadiens tonight, because obviously it's game four in that Eastern Conference best of seven final tonight. We'll get to you have a bunch of plays in that. Let's just talk Vegas Golden Knights because this is a glorious day. And I want to start by giving you a shout. When I asked you, when you were on the show a few weeks ago, I want to say maybe a couple weeks ago, and I asked you, hey, what would you make a hypothetical if it ends up being the Golden Knights and the Avalanche? Because the matchup hadn't been set yet. What would the series price be? And you said Avalanche -160. And I thought to myself, wow, that seems way low. Well, the joke's on me because they sweep the Avalanche +2850 for those who had that ticket. That cashes. And I guess my first question to you is this team right now, not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights of the regular season, but this team under John Tortorella, the way they're playing right now, is this team better than the 2023 Stanley Cup champs, in your opinion?
I don't know if they're necessarily better than they were. I mean, that team had everything going. They were four lines deep. They played a different style of hockey. But this team under John Tortorella, you know, it's a much different team, and Tortorella's talked about it. William Karlsson coming back from injury changes everything for the Golden Knights. He lengthens this lineup. They become so deep at the center position, and it just slots everybody better. And then the other thing, guys, is, look, they don't win that game when they were down 3-0 in game three under Bruce Cassidy. Yeah. They would have folded their tents because Bruce would have just berated them on the bench. And Tortorella's just talked about how he kind of just sits back and, you know, he just kind of keeps them, you know, in check, but he doesn't overcoach. And it's been remarkable what this team has done under Tortorella. Just, what, 5 losses since he took over with, what, 8 games left in the regular season?
I will even correct you. 18-4 and, well, I guess, yeah, the one is, I guess, technically lost, mm-hmm. right? But 18-4-1 is, I guess, the official record.
Right.
Let me, and I'm a much more casual hockey fan than you are, but the thing that was amazing to me about last night's game is Golden Knights were up 1-0. Obviously, they got the one to put them up 2 late, but it was remarkable how few chances the Avalanche could even muster. I mean, the Golden Knights were just playing so well, and that's what sort of elicits the question that I asked you. I was like, wow, I don't know who beats this team. If it's the Hurricanes and the Golden Knights, I'll put you on the spot again, Jonathan. What's that series price? Assuming, by the way, that's a big assumption because Hurricanes got to win two more games still against the Canadiens. What would that series price be?
Well, I saw one. I saw some book put out. I think Carolina would be -120, -115 over favorite over Vegas. And I think part of the problem, and you know, Colorado had, you know, their best forward Nathan MacKinnon was compromised for, you know, the last game and a half. Their best defenseman Cale Makar, you know, was dealing with a bad shoulder. You could see that he could not take a slap shot in this series. And then they were missing, you know, so you're missing your best forward, your best defenseman, but that's not to take anything away from Vegas, who, I mean, they were so detailed in their game.
So detailed in their game. That's for sure. Well, congratulations to you as a Golden Knights fan, and we'll see if the Golden Knights can, they're headed to their third Stanley Cup final in 9 seasons in franchise history. We will see if they can win their second. Regardless of who the opponent might be, Hurricanes or Canadiens. And so to the Eastern Conference Final we go, where it is 2-1 Hurricanes. Hurricanes 10-1 in this postseason. Again, I mentioned earlier this week, the record for a 16-win format record coast-to-coast is 16-2 by the Edmonton Oilers of 1988. So the Hurricanes sort of, not quite yet, but kind of flirting with that pace. Hurricanes are -143 favorite tonight at the Bell Center in Montreal. How do you see this game?
Well, I mean, I guess we should be betting 3-2 both teams because that's been the common theme in the last couple of games between the two. But for me, this is, I like to say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So it's a lot of instant gratification for me. You know, the Montreal Canadiens have scored a first period goal in 15 of the 17 playoff games. Why buck the trend? I'll go with Canadiens to score a first period goal. Carolina has scored the first goal of the game in 9 of 11 of their last 11 games. So Carolina to score first. I'll play both teams to score in the first period. That's happened in 8 of the last 10 Canadiens games. So for me, it's all about the first period. It's in my write-up at VSiN.com. But that for me is the way to go. It's the way I went in game 3, and I'll continue it in game number 4.
And we have some other bets here, right? You have first 5 minutes, first period, first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, goal in the first 5, Gil, has cashed in 8 of the last 10 Montreal games, 4 straight Carolina games. Goal first 10 is on a 10-0 run for the Canadiens and 5 of 6 for Carolina.
Wow. Okay. You also have a prop bet here as well?
Yeah, the one prop bet, Lane Hutson for the Montreal Canadiens, for 2 block shots. And then I think, I parlayed that. I believe, I'm trying to remember now. Help me out here if you've got that. I know I've got Hutson over for 3 block shots at like -105. I've been trying to find his defensive partner, Mike Matheson, for 2 block shots to put that in a parlay. But for whatever reason, the books are not offering Matheson anywhere, which is kind of interesting to me because he's not injured.
The Dylan Harper treatment, as we call it in the basketball world, with props.
Yeah, for real.
Just being out there.
So parlay those, Jonathan, if people can find it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, if you can find Matheson for 2 blocks, I would parlay that with Hutson for 2 at a good price. It's just that for some reason, Matheson, I've checked a couple of books, and, you know, that one's come up on the day of the game. It wasn't up the night before in game 3. They had about 5 other players up for their block shots. And then it came out the day of game 3. For some reason, the day of game 4, Matheson's still not available. But if it becomes available, I would put him in a parlay for 2.
All right. First period, both teams to score, +196. First period, over 1.5 goals, -105. Carolina to score the first goal, first period, +115. Canadiens to score first period goal, -128. Goal scored first 5 minutes of the first period, +192. First 10 minutes, -136. And then the 3-plus block shots prop there at the bottom.
Again. Now, the other one, guys, more. If Carolina does score first, I would play live in-game Montreal to score the next goal.
Okay, let's add that one to it as well. Just again, naked eye watching hockey. Hurricanes, even I know these games have been as close as possible on the scoreboard. Hurricanes feel like they're so much better than the Canadiens to me. Is that a correct sort of general analysis from you?
Well, I mean, look, they've dominated the shots on goal numbers, and they've also dominated, you know, the shot attempt numbers. But, you know, Carolina tends to shoot from everywhere. They've done a good job of of you know, preventing Montreal from getting shots. Canadiens coach Martin St. Louis talked about changing some things up tonight. He says sometimes you may have to give up the puck to get the puck back. And if you remember the first goal of the Golden Knights game, it was a flip pass by Braden McNabb to Mark Stone that set him in on a breakaway. Look for the Canadiens to do something like that. And I don't know, here's one thing for the Canadiens. Their goalie, Jakub Dobish, happy 25th birthday to him today. Maybe the Canadiens get the birthday boost because Dobish, I'm telling you guys, there's money on the board tonight that he's put up for a Canadiens victory.
The birthday angle. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Congrats on the Knights.
Thank you.